Welcome to the Let's Get Vulnerable podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Morgan Anderson, psychologist, relationship coach, attachment theory expert, creator of the ESL relationship method, author of Love Magnet, and athletic wear connoisseur. My mission is to help you raise your self-worth, have great relationships, and step confidently into the next level of your life. Each week, two episodes will air featuring expert advice, live coaching, and tips showing you exactly how to improve your life and attract a healthy relationship. You deserve to feel empowered, secure, and loved. Buckle up and let's get vulnerable. You're so tired of watching all your friends get married and looking at everybody else having healthy, secure relationships, and you're sitting on the sidelines wondering, when will it be my turn? I want to invite you that you can decide to take ownership, that you can say, I'm going to become the version of me who effortlessly attracts my emotionally available ideal partner. And you're going to stop wasting your time on relationships that go nowhere, right? I want to invite you that you can make that decision. And spring is an incredible time to do the work with us inside of the Empowered, Secure, Loved program. This program is founded by myself, Dr. Morgan, clinical psychologist, attachment theory expert. It has helped hundreds of women become securely attached so that they can attract the relationships that they deserve. Now is your turn. And this spring is an incredible time to join us introducing Soft Girl Secure Spring Sale this April only. When you join the program, you get a bonus training that is how to embody secure feminine energy. This is a topic I love talking about, and you'll get this training as a gift. Also, you'll get the Become the One bundle. This is all about becoming the secure version of you. It includes meditations, affirmations, a communication framework. It is so, so valuable. And that's another gift. On top of that, you get a bonus month in the program. So instead of 2 months with us, you'll have 3 whole months where you'll receive support, one-on-one coaching, group coaching, and of course, the coursework, all of that with a bonus month and a $400 discount on the program. So that is a no-brainer. If you've been on the fence, if you've been thinking about doing the work, this is the time. Take advantage of our Soft Girl Secure Spring Sale. This is going away, and I would apply to the program today. Go use the link in the show notes, and it's super easy. You'll fill out an application, meet with someone on my team, and go from there. So it takes 5 minutes, go to the link in the show notes, apply today. I can't wait to see you inside of the program. Welcome everyone to the Let's Get Vulnerable podcast. We have a very special guest with us today. Welcome Nina Caviola to the podcast. I'm so excited to have you.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here. I'm hoping this is going to be like a super fun girl on girl.
That sounded really bad.
Girl to girl conversation, like real, raw, unfiltered.
Yes, I'm so excited. I know we were talking about this. It's been over a year since we last talked, and I know there's so many things that we can get into. I want to give my audience just a little background on you. So I have your bio here. Nina is a mom of 2 toddlers who shares the highs and lows of motherhood, self-love, and acceptance, and dressing a mid-sized mom bod in a relatable and honest way. On social, she shares everything from fashion, mental health, and parenting to marriage and everything in between. She is a people lover and extrovert, the girl who can read the room and is determined to put a smile on your face. She likes to think she's everything you look for in a best friend. It is her mission to help the average woman, especially moms, feel less alone, no matter what season of life she is in. Nina loves to share style for a mid-sized apple-shaped body. She is the host of Mama Knows podcast, which is phenomenal, which is in the top 100 category for family and parenting with over 10,000 plus downloads monthly. This is truly her passion project and she pours her heart into it. Nina, welcome, welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here. And you reading that out loud like that made me all emotional. Not like I wrote it or anything, but I was like, oh.
Yes, you, gosh, you really, you have done so much. And I know that you're so passionate. And I'll tell everyone that I follow Nina and she influences me to buy things all of the time. And I love it. Like the, you look so good in all of your outfits. And I remember one of the things I first thought when I connected with you on social media was just the vulnerability in the way that you can own your body. This is what I look like. Hey, and this is how I'm making, you know, like you'll have Spanx or you'll do whatever, right? And it's like just the vulnerability of it. It's a different type of vulnerability than I do. But yeah. You know, you're in your underwear, girl, on social media.
I know. I sometimes wonder, I'm like, when do I not do that anymore? Because my kids are going to be in school and I just, you know, I don't know. Like, I don't see anything wrong with it, but
no.
Society twists things like that. They make women look and feel sexual when we're not being sexual. Like, everyone wears underwear. And why don't we have a girl pact where we share the best underwear? Like, it's just simple. I don't know how that happened, honestly. I first started out on social media in the home decor space. And ooh, you should see my house now. It's a mess. But I started in the home decor space. My husband and I were just dating. We weren't even engaged yet. And we bought a house together. And we were doing, like, the farmhouse vibe, like, redoing it ourselves, DIY. And that's how it started for me. I started sharing our projects and I grew on social media through that. And that was back in like 2014, like a long, time ago. So it was super easy to grow. And then I got married, and right around the time I got married is when stories came on Instagram. Stories became a big thing. And that's when you can really show your personality. And because of that, my personality brought in a lot more people, and I started sharing more of my personal life instead of just pictures of my home. And then I got pregnant, and that's kind of when it took off for me. The motherhood space really encompassed all of everything that I was. And I felt like that's where I belonged, and the home stuff just felt so surface level for me. So I really joined that motherhood space, and I was navigating it all blindly, as all moms do, right? Like, you go into becoming a parent and you're like, what the fuck am I doing? I don't know what I'm doing. And I shared it all, like, raw, unfiltered. I was like, this is hard. Like, I don't love the newborn phase. My baby's screaming all the time. And, you know, I shared that, and that really helped my audience feel less alone, because you only, up until that point, up until probably the last couple of years, you can probably agree, social media is a highlight reel. Everybody just posts like the pretty, the perfect, the put together. And I was like, that's not how my life is. And then as I had more kids, I had another baby, and shit got real. Like, I had a lot of mental health issues.
Yeah.
And so my social media has really pivoted quite a bit with my life. Like, every time something happened in my life, I would pivot. And as one thing that annoys me when people message me on social media, like, don't share this, you're a fashion account. And like, wait a minute, like, I'm me, like, this is my account, I'll share whatever I want. So how I got into fashion, it was really just in the last, I would say, 2 to 3 years. I've always had a really trusting audience. Like, that's something I'm really proud of. I pride myself in having built a community on trust and vulnerability. And it was never about selling or links or link clicks for me. It was never about that for me. But because my audience trusts me, I started to work with brands and started to get paid for what I was talking about. And always talking about the things that I truly, genuinely like and would use. And I got kind of freaked out in the motherhood space after a while, because the bigger I grew, So I said this to my followers the other day. I was like, the bigger you get on social media, the less people actually know you and the less people invest themselves in who you are. They're only really here for your content. Like when you going viral is not, I don't like going viral because it brings in all these people because of one video they saw and then they don't really see who I am as a person. So less people truly know who I am. And then they make this idea up about who I should be because of what they saw in one video or one picture. So motherhood got a little sticky for me. I was like, I don't feel comfortable getting eaten alive all the time because I was sharing controversial stuff. I was like, I was sharing gentle parenting, respectful parenting. At the time, people were like, that's dumb. You're permissive. Your kids are going to grow up to be spoiled, rotten, this and that. So, and I got sick of that. I was like, I can't.
Yeah.
So then I was like, people kept asking me like, where's your outfit? Can I get a link? So because of that, it just slowly transitioned into fashion. So now I would call myself mostly fashion, but I also share motherhood, not my kids as much, but I still share the hardships. And recently in the last probably year, I've been really sharing a lot about my relationship with my husband and how we're navigating that after after having two kids and mental health issues. We both are in therapy. We're in therapy together. So I share a lot of vulnerable stuff. But because of my sensitive heart, I do tend to keep a lot of my content surface level.
Yeah.
Talk to me.
This is something I want to talk to you about. And I really appreciate you giving us kind of the backstory and giving the context of how you got to where you are. I obviously am in the space as well. And I talk about relationships, as you know. And I really struggle with what do I share about my relationship with my partner. We're going on 3 years together, yet you've never seen a picture of him on my social media. I am very private and I'm still exploring why is that, right? Like what is it about it? But I'm curious for you, how do you make the decision of what do I share and what do I keep for myself?
Oh, that's a good question. So Tom is my husband. We've had a lot of conversations about what I share and what he feels comfortable me sharing. I share just enough for people to know that we're in the thick of it and we're going through it. And then I also share like what we're doing about it. Because if we have issues that we're not necessarily working on because of our own issues, right? Like I'm not ready to tackle this issue and I feel like I'm nasty and you're nasty and we're just not, you know, vibing. And that's not necessarily something I'm going to like share and like tear apart my partner. I don't come on social media and tear apart my kids or my partner. If I come on social media and I'm going to share something, it's going to be something that's probably been happening for a while. And it's probably something I've already addressed and or getting help and or done research on. I never just come on and like, Tom's an asshole. He's not emptying the dishwasher. Can you imagine?
Oh my God.
So how do I decide? First, we talk about it. We talk about what we're allowed to share about each other. And I'm never going to talk shit about the people that I love to people that, you know, we have our safe people. Like I have my best friend and my mom and I could be like, he's being an asshole today. And I'm not in the mental space to care about fixing it. I just want to bitch about it. So you have your safe people and that's not social media for me. You know, that's not like, I feel like that's like 2008 Facebook status era. Like,
right.
We're not in that era.
No, we're not there anymore. Wow.
So we share. Yeah. I know what I'm allowed to share. And it's usually the things that we've already figured out. It's just like, I'm sharing the lessons learned here because you're not alone.
Yeah. And I think I've heard this talked about where you don't want to come to social media with the open wound that's bleeding out.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, we put a band-aid on it or it's become a scar.
Yeah.
Right. Like
I love knowing that analogy. That,
yeah. Like there's something that you've kind of done about it before you're going to social media when you're in that vulnerable place of, oh gosh, you know, I really need help or support. You're not going to go to social media for that. I love that you talked about having your safe people. And just to back up too, this is so huge. I feel like we have to talk about this, of being in a marriage that obviously there's things that you're working on, just like any marriage,
mm-hmm.
right? Let's get that out there. Okay. There is no perfect marriage. There is no problem-free marriage, right?
Yeah.
And you're having that realization of, wow, there's things that we have to work on as individuals. Yeah. Even before we're working on the relationship. Can you talk to me about that, of what that's been like?
Yeah. So we've always been such a good couple. Like, I'm very extroverted and loud and I take charge. You know, I'm the person that kind of people like notice because of my personality. I mean, Tom has a great personality. He's very funny and sarcastic. And people just love him. But he, in our marriage wise, he's the more timid, like he's more likely to have like balanced and level-headed conversation. Whereas I'm the more like, no, fuck you. Like he's definitely a little bit more mature when it comes to arguments, but yeah. So I went to therapy after my second kid and I was 33. It's the first time I went to therapy and I learned so much about myself. And then Tom started therapy shortly after and he learned a lot about himself. And I think that really helps both of us realize like the issues we have in our marriage quite literally stem from the issues that we have unresolved within ourselves about ourselves. Like for both of us, it's childhood stuff. And so we've kind of navigated therapy separately and now we're in therapy together. And it's been eye-opening how it's like that we have the same argument over and over again in therapy. It's like the same thing over and over again. I've talked about this on previous episodes on my podcast, but we are constantly arguing about tone and the way I receive things, the way he receives things when we are arguing. And then we don't really listen to understand each other. And I think this is, you can probably vouch for this, right? Like most couples, like you're just listening to attack. And that's me. Like that's a toxic trait of mine. And it's not just with Tom, it's with everyone. Like, so it's something I know I have to work on. So yeah, I think that in any relationship, usually the issues that you have, and I'm not licensed to be claiming this, but I think just from my own experience from hearing people, usually the issues that you have in your relationship is probably something that you need to figure out on your own. Like I constantly need validation. Like I'm seeking validation constantly. And I've learned that that's because I don't love myself enough to like give myself the space. And like, so with him, he's not a words guy. Like he's not going to be like, I'm so proud of you. You're amazing. Like he shows his validation in very different ways. But I try to tell him like, that's for me, like you doing all these things for me doesn't hit like you talking to me. Mm-hmm. But then my therapist and our therapist says like, but why are you so invested in getting this validation? Like, do you need it from yourself? So we're currently working on that. That's currently in our therapy.
I love that you brought that up. You know I talk about attachment theory. Mm-hmm. That's my expertise, and yeah, creating secure attachment. And one of the things I always tell people is love languages. It's helpful to understand that for mm-hmm. creating secure attachment, but it's yeah. not everything. You can't no. just go to your partner and say, this is my love language. You have to give me words of affirmation. That's not going to solve it. And I'm so glad that you are in couples therapy. I was a couples therapist for a long yeah. time. I loved doing that work. And I think it's vulnerable. It's messy. It's freaking hard, mm-hmm. like, you know, and the fact that you're willing to show up for it while taking ownership as individuals and acknowledging childhood. And I mean, let's just talk about that. We're both in our 30s and mm-hmm. there's stuff from childhood that is unresolved. And yeah. I think sometimes we're like, that's really inconvenient. That's yeah. really annoying.
For real though, I'm gonna ask you a question. Do you feel like, I was just thinking about this the other day, yesterday. I'm going to be 36 this year. And I'm like, I just spent literally more than half my 30s figuring my life out because of my childhood shit. Like, that's not fair. Like, I'm supposed to be living. So I wonder, like, a lot of people say, like, your 40s is where it's at. Is that why your 40s is where it's at? Because my 30s so far, I love my 30s. I feel so much more confident and, like,
yeah,
I just love this age. I wish I could freeze this age, especially because of my kids. However, I feel like it's been a lot of work. My 30s have been nothing but work on myself.
I agree with you. I'm turning 35 really soon. And I think what I realized just the other day was 20s was pure survival mode for me. Mm-hmm. It was like getting through grad school. I moved. So I had a different apartment every single year. I had all these different boyfriends. It was like chaos, mess, binge drinking, survival. Okay. Yep. And then it's like the dust settled in my 30s a bit. And now I have to deal with everything that mm-hmm. I was avoiding. And I'm so fortunate that I've had great work and I've had a ton of breakthroughs, but I do think about, wow, yeah, the 30s have been the unearthing of so many things,
yeah,
that I avoided, and it's all there.
Yeah. And for me, it's been like raising kids while raising myself. Like I literally feel like I'm re-raising myself and figuring out who I am, and then at the same time I'm raising my kids while I'm literally healing my own inner child. So it's like,
that's a lot.
How much longer is this gonna be going on for?
I hear you. I have a twin sister and she has two kids, and so I'm aunt mode a lot. I love being the aunt. But her and I talk about how we lost our mom at age 6 and her kids are now becoming that age.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like this having to go through that all over again. So when there was traumatic things that happened to us at a certain age, and as mm-hmm. her kids turn that age, it's like reprocessing it mm-hmm. all over.
Yeah,
so I totally relate. And then you're going, okay, I want to have a corrective experience for my children, right? Like, I want to do this differently. I want to show up different. And that takes a lot of effort of being that intentional parent while also healing your own childhood stuff.
Yeah. And I mean, they do say that our generation, we're the same age. Our generation is the first of generations to really just tackle this mental health and healing and inner child work, and and we're having kids, and we have young kids, and we really want better for our kids. I keep thinking about, like, what are my kids gonna go to therapy for?
Yeah.
Like, what am I doing wrong? I mean, a lot, but
yeah. It's so interesting because I think we focus a lot on, you know, oh gosh, there's parental failures or ways that we fail our kids. And the reality is that there is always going to be failures. But I think about it on a spectrum of being the good enough parent, of like being good enough to know in attachment theory, we talk about that you're a safe object, that they can come to you and be reassured and that you're safe. And there's something so powerful in knowing I just have to be the good enough parent, not the perfect parent, just good enough.
Yeah. And it's hard when you're a parent. For the moms listening, it's like you feel like you're good, but then the bad moments can really like trigger.
Mm-hmm.
For me, like when I have my bad moments, and this is something I'm working on too, I really like let myself be identified by that moment. And I just recently heard something that's like, when you are that bad self, that you're experiencing someone that you are not normally, like, even, and this can apply to relationships too. Like, you're in a fight or you're in your red zone, right? You're really like screaming, yelling, saying mean things, throwing, whatever you're doing. That's not who you are. Like, that's not your personality. that's the person that you learned about being as a kid, but really that's not who you are. And you just need to figure out ways to tame that, or like how to catch yourself before you reach that personality. Cause that's not, so that's something I try to remind myself when I'm having really bad, like ashamed of moments in motherhood. I try to tell myself like, that's not who I am.
Yes.
Like, that's not who I want to be. And that's not who I am.
It's so powerful. And it's so true. The same in relationships with a romantic partner. And I think realizing that version of ourselves where we've regressed, or we've gone to who we are in our fight or flight mode, that is not who we are. But
yeah,
that's obviously a version of ourselves that we don't want to spend a lot of time in. I think the issue comes when we're like, oh, I'm showing up that way every single day, right? Then it's like, mm-hmm. Whoa, I really need to work on this. But to know that no one is perfect, everyone's going to have those red zone moments,
right?
Or where
every day,
you're completely emotionally dysregulated. It happens.
Yeah. And it's okay. Yeah. I shouldn't say every day, because like every day is like, okay, now you should probably talk to someone. But I have this thing with my therapist where it's like the green, yellow, orange, and red. So like when you're in the yellow, you should immediately, once you're in the yellow, you should like do something to reset yourself. Yes. Like stand up against the wall, like my back against the wall, go outside, put your head in the freezer, like something that'll just like kind of reset that wiring for me.
Yeah.
But I mean, I have, when I go into the red zone often, and this is with my partner or my kids, I can almost every single time, actually every single time, I can always pin it back to a self-care need that I didn't give myself.
Yes.
I'm not sleeping enough. I'm scrolling too much. I'm not eating enough. You know, it's always a simple need like that I am consistently missing for myself.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. And that's why it's so good to do proactive self-care. That's why we mm-hmm. talk about self-care is, okay,
yes,
I can do it proactively, right? And then I say the same thing with my clients about, you have to catch yourself as soon as you can, because if mm-hmm. you can catch yourself at yellow, that's going to be easier than orange. And then mm-hmm. stopping yourself at red, forget about it, right? That is not going to happen.
You're just going to have to ride the wave at that
ride
point.
Ride the wave at that point. So yeah, the earlier, the better. And I think what, as moms, as entrepreneurs, as really busy, busy women, it's so easy to not slow down and not tune into yourself, or to go, whoa, I'm at yellow. Okay, I'm just going to ignore that and I'm going to just mm-hmm. push through, right? And it's like, mm-hmm. no, you have to start training yourself to tune in.
Mm-hmm. And it's not something that comes easy. You can't just, I have an episode on my podcast called stoplight activity, which is the red,
good,
yellow, and green light. But I've been using that process in mine and Tom's relationship, because we both have different, we both get triggered by our kids' behavior in different moments. And I've noticed that we've started to like tag each other out subconsciously. And like, for example, last night, and this is where a lot of our fights come in, like, I'll literally be like, do not talk to my kids like that. Or he'll say to me, she's 3 years old, do not yell at her. Like, we go back and forth and like shame each other for talking to our kids the way we talk. Mm. But we've learned to tag each other out. So like last night, my son was not gonna go brush his teeth. Like, he was like, no, I'm not doing it. He was just stalling. And Tom was like, I could tell he was losing it. And we've started to like verbally say, I'm about to lose it. Like, and I know that normally I would be like, oh, chill out, like, you're being dramatic. Normally I would take that as like, you're being dramatic, quit, like, you're an adult, grow up. But now I see it as, he's in his yellow, like, he's in his orange, and he needs help. So last night, and he does it for me too. So last night I said to my kids, I was like, okay, we're going to be a family of bunnies. We're going to hop to the bathroom. Who wants to be the brother bunny? Who wants, you know? So like, I was regulated. So I was able to like come up with something that the kids would do. And Tom still doesn't like he doesn't like it when I'm like, go take a break. Even though I like really mean it. Like I mean it. Like just go step away, take a break. He doesn't like that. Like he thinks that he needs to like be stoic and work through it. But I've been like intervening with my whatever I can, whenever I can. So that's one thing I did notice in our relationship that has helped a lot is I'm trying really hard not to take his overstimulation or his like dysregulation personal. Because I used to take it personal. I used to be like, I need to fix that. Like he's, and I'm the problem. Like I need to fix it. This, I took it personal. And that was a big issue in our relationship. So now I don't take it personal. I just take it as he's struggling. He needs help. And I'm his partner. So I'm going to help.
This is so, that is such an important shift of going,
yeah, we're
okay,
working on it.
Yeah, of being in that place of, I cannot regulate your emotions. I always tell my clients, you know, we can't outsource our emotions being regulated. We actually have to do that ourselves. Mm-hmm. And we certainly can't do it for other people. And when you can realize, okay, I can support him. I can say, maybe go take a break or what do you need to feel supported? But I cannot regulate it for him. That is such a powerful shift.
Mm-hmm. And it's hard because I've literally only ever known to fix other, like anytime someone has a big feeling in my family, like I feel I need to fix that. And I'm at the point because of therapy and self-work and couples therapy, I'm at the point where I'm consistently able to separate myself from their emotion and know that it's not mine. I don't own it and it's not my fault. I'm not a bad person.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's not something like you said before, it's not something that just happens. It's yeah. something that you have to practice over and over again, just like confidence, just like anything in life. If yes. you want it, you have to practice it.
Talk to me for a second. And this is, I mean, I think about this all the time, but what do you think it would be like for you being in your family, being a mom, if you hadn't done any of this healing work or been willing to go to therapy? Like what would it be like?
Oh my God. I don't know. I like hate to think about that version of myself that I was before I started therapy. I was having intrusive thoughts. I was having chest pain. I don't know. I feel like I would be yelling. I would have a toxic relationship with my kids and my husband. I don't even want to go there.
Yeah,
I don't think, but luckily I am a highly sensitive person, and usually highly sensitive people are a little bit like research obsessed.
So
I literally will research everything. I will read all the evidence before I, like, I will come with receipts. I'm also a Virgo. Virgos come with receipts. Like, here's my receipt. I've done all the research.
Yeah.
So I don't think I could ever be, but I wasn't yeah. like, I wasn't like that in my 20s. And I wasn't like that before kids. I truly feel like my kids saved me in a way. And I know that sounds so cliche. They just like literally saved me and changed me. Like, I feel like I'm such a better person. But I also want to say, like, this is hard for me because I don't think I was a bad person before. I always say when people ask me about, I recently went through a kind of a big weight loss, and it was because of health issues. And people always ask me, like, or they make comments about how I look and how good I look. And I always say, like, I'm proud of the version of me from a year ago. I'm proud of the version of me from almost 6 years ago when I was pregnant with my first, because that version of me did the work. Like, I did the hard work. I did that. And that version of me who was really vulnerable, really struggling, like really in a dark place, I took the steps to become who I am. And I continue to be that version for myself. I continue to do the work. And then next year, I can look back and say, I'm proud of me for doing this to be where I am. So I never look at it as like, I was a shitty person. I was so bad. Like, I didn't know how to communicate. Because yes, all those things might be true, but I also did the work.
And you were you were doing the best that you could, right? It's the Maya Angelou quote that we all love. When we know better, we do better. And you were always doing the best that you could. Mm-hmm. And I think it's so important to have compassion for those earlier versions of ourselves who just didn't know, or who honestly didn't have the strength to deal with things, or the strength to do healing work. You know, I know myself in my 20s, I was not a great friend. I certainly was not a good person to date. There's a lot of things that I know were not great about how I showed up in the world. And I also know it was because I had a ton of unhealed trauma and I was just doing the best that I could at that time.
Exactly. And that's what's important. And I think it's so important for people. People don't see the work that we're doing on the inside. Like, they don't, especially people who you maybe don't consistently talk to, but people don't, like my mom, for example, there's a lot of things that I'm like, well, I would never parent like she parented. I would never do what she did. But I, like you said, I know that she did the best with what she felt she had and like what she had, what resources she had. And I don't hold that against her. And I feel like because of those feelings, like I feel like I'm truly like healed in that space of compassion and empathy for people.
It's so powerful. It's so powerful once we can get there and that we're not holding on to anger and resentment. And we really can open our hearts with boundaries, of course, because we learn all about boundaries and how to protect our energy, et cetera. But being able to just not hold on to anger or bitterness when you really know people are doing the best they can, right? I loved what you said about your kids saving you. And I think about, I'm really excited to be a mom. I'm not a mom yet. I know it's coming in my future in some way. But I think about just like that honor and privilege of raising kids and having that role in someone's life. Mm-hmm. And I think it's so powerful that you've taken that role of mom, and some people use it as all consuming and like avoiding themselves even more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Going even further down a spiral. Mm-hmm. Right. But you were able to use it as let me use it to motivate me to become a healthier and even better version of me for my kids.
Yes. And a lot of people will take that quite literal, say like, my kids saved me, like I owe them everything. But I feel like,
excuse me,
I feel like my kids saved me in the sense that I was able to like work on myself. And also, I know how important it is to take care of myself. I don't do everything in the world for my kids. I would. But I take care of myself, my marriage, and then my kids. I mean, when it comes to like mental health, right? Like, obviously, if my kids need food and water, like they're gonna, you know, I'm gonna feed my kids before I eat. But like, actually, no, I shouldn't, right? Like, analytically speaking, you really should feed yourself, because then how are you gonna feed your kids if you're hungry? But what I'm saying is, I take care of myself first, because if my bucket is empty, then everyone else is going to get the brunt of it. So yes, my kids saved me, but they also taught me that it is so important to take care of yourself first before you can help others.
And I think that's so powerful, because I see some people, and this is not to speak negatively of anyone, but I know I've run into people where they're kind of saying, oh, my kids have prevented me from taking care of myself, right? And I think it's this whole thing when you say, hey, what about you showing up for you, even if it's 10 minutes in the morning, or it's that 15-minute walk, or it's working on your own mental health and finally getting a therapist, like, what about saying your kids could be the reason for you to do that so that you can show up well for them? Instead of, I'm so busy showing up for my kids, I can't show up for me. And I know, I know it's so hard. And I'm not a mother. I see my twin sister. I have taken my niece and nephew for 2 weeks. So I feel like I kind of had like a crash course. But I was like, oh, wow. But I don't want people to use kids as a reason why they're stuck. because you can let it be a motivator for change. And a lot of people do.
And you're, if you're doing everything for them and not taking care of yourself, you're teaching them that they shouldn't take care of themselves.
Yes.
I mean, self-care is so important. Like, I literally was like, my kids know when I go to the gym, mommy's going to exercise. This is very important to me. And I make, you know, people will say like, I don't have childcare, I don't have help, I don't have this. And I'm very blessed. Like, I have a good community where I have help, but I've also created the space for myself where it's important. Like, what's important to you needs to be like, if you need to take a shower, if your kids, you don't have childcare, let them sit in the bathroom with you on the floor, give them something to do, give them a tablet, whatever you need to do to take care of yourself, do it. Mm-hmm. And that's what's important. It's important to take care of yourself. Otherwise, and same in a marriage too, like Tom.
Yes.
And we find it very important that he goes and does what's important to him. I go and do what's important to me. But then we also date each other. We're kind of bad at that. We need to date a little bit more. But we do make it very, like, we just went on a trip together. And we said to our kids, like, mommy and daddy are going to be gone for 4 days because it's super important that mommy and daddy have alone time together because we love each other. And we're, you know, our kids are very aware that we take care of ourselves. We like actually have conversations with them about it and how important it is to take care of yourself.
And that's such a gift to them that you're modeling that they're going to have those examples. It really is.
Yeah. And I think the problem is there's a lot of shame in the motherhood community. Like, you get shamed if you take time away. You get shamed if you go on a date. Like, Tom and I had gone, we went to Mexico for 4 days and we had been home for 2 weeks after that. And we went on a date. We have not, before Mexico, we had not gone on a date in a long time. It was a holiday season, whatever. And I posted, I was like, oh, we haven't been in a date in forever. And like, yes, I guess Mexico counts as a date, but we haven't been on like out to eat in forever. And grandma was watching the kids. Somebody was like, how dare she talk about how she hasn't been in a date forever? She just went da-da-da, like on vacation with her husband. And people literally will shame you. They will shame you for going on a date. They will shame you for not. Like, you just can't win.
Yeah.
You just can't win. But
you can't win. And it's, I think what you realize with social media, obviously, and in life in general, that it can be just a lot of people's, their own stuff getting projected in some way.
Yes.
And obviously they don't know you. They don't know the context and they're just using it as an opportunity to judge. It's challenging. I think it's challenging to be a creator in that space and in particular. Because it is such a vulnerable thing. It's something we care so, so deeply. The more we care about something, then the more vulnerable it feels.
Yeah, I struggle with that a lot. I struggle with how much I want to share because when you share your life, someone's going to have an opinion.
Right.
And then it becomes surface level. And that's not me. That's not who I am. I'm very vulnerable and open. So it's definitely a balancing act and it's something I'm still figuring out. I go through phases of like, fuck this. I'm not sharing anything personal ever again. And then I go, you know, it's just, I think that's something that we're all navigating. Like, you can probably relate. Like, we're kind of paving the way. Like, we're the first generation to share our lives online.
It's true. Yeah. And you have to learn what feels good to you. And I think sometimes you learn by sharing something that didn't feel good to share and you learn from that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about having so much compassion. And I don't know about you, but I just honestly get to a point where I'm not reading comments. I'm not, you know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I go through phases where I'm like, I can't.
If it's a bad mental health day, I'm not going to go look at my comments.
No.
Like, you have to be able...
Luckily, most of them are nice and great and supportive.
I know. 98% of them are wonderful, right?
Yeah. And then we fixate on the negative.
Yeah. I know.
But we're just we're human. We can sit here and talk about how healed we are all we want, but we're human.
Yeah. We're all humans. We're all in it together. And I know, yes. So, and I saw you talk about a couple things on social media that were really vulnerable. One, you were talking about weight loss and how you were going through that publicly and how that was challenging. Share more about that. I would love to hear more.
Yeah, so for anyone that follows me will know, but I share a lot of mid-size fashion. So mid-size, and somebody always comes for me for this, is typically between size 8 and size like 18. Like that's like you're like not considered plus size, you're not considered small, like you're just kind of in the middle. And I've always kind of been in the middle, always, my whole life. And I was a size 12, 14, like 14, probably a year and a half ago. And I was very confident and proud. And I've always been, I shouldn't say I've always been confident, but on social media, I've always tried to be confident in the body that I have. And it was never about hating my body or not liking my body. So a year ago, I was having a lot of issues. I have lupus, which is an autoimmune disease, and I also had SIBO, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. And then I also have severe acid reflux with a hernia. So I have a lot of health issues that like people don't, I don't like come on here and talk about my health issues, right? Like I talk about fashion and motherhood. And so I got to a point where I was so miserable. Like the medications I was on weren't helping me at all. I was like super puffy and swollen and uncomfortable in my skin. Like my eyes, like if you go back and look, like you just could tell I was super inflamed, which is my lupus, but also other things can cause that. So I was like, I need to do something about this. And I remember thinking like, I don't want to increase my medication dose because that's all they would, if I went to gastro, they would have just said, here, just increase your dose. But then I also was thinking like, I need to lose weight, not because I didn't like myself, but I needed to lose weight because I was feeling so heavy. Not like, not heavy because of my weight, but like my body just felt so tired. I was having like 3 cups of coffee a day, 1 Celsius a day, and nothing was doing it. And I just felt sluggish and just gross. But also, I didn't feel like I was eating bad. Like I wasn't like out, I barely went out to eat. You know, it was nothing like that. So I came across this TikTok actually that was like talking about gut health. And I was like, interesting, because a lot of my stuff is gut health. So I went down this rabbit hole and I decided I was going to find a naturopathic doctor or provider to help me. And I found NutriTrue Wellness. Actually, she came on my podcast. So I was like, I already know who she is. So I contacted her and I did this whole gut health healing journey with them. Essentially, they had me eliminate everything from my diet and then reintroduce it back in. The goal was to have a fully diverse diet. It wasn't like I wasn't dieting, quote unquote. I wasn't following like a strict program. It was literally to figure out how to get rid of the bacteria overgrowth. So I did a bunch of lab tests and everything that showed me what I had. And because of that, I lost like 40 pounds. And I knew because of the dietary changes, I was getting rid of sugar and gluten and alcohol. And I knew, like, I'm not, I mean, most people know, like, when you get rid of all that shit out of your diet, like, you're gonna lose weight, like, whether you're overweight or not. So I lost weight. And before I lost weight, I publicly did say, like, I'm doing this. I'm gonna share my journey with you guys. I'm not doing this for weight loss. And I have a whole, like, 1 hour long episode about this and how it all looked and what all went down. But I did it and I had to publicly lose weight, and it was really hard because not everyone, you know, not everyone sees your content every day. So like there were people that still to this day will be like, oh, they'll message me, oh my God, you've lost so much weight, what are you on, send me a link. And it's been, I'm so at peace with it. Like people will make assumptions. Like there's rumors about how I was on Ozempic and you know, and it's one of those things like even if I was, like that's my life, you know, that's Yeah. I can do what I want. And I think that's where social media, being a public figure on social media, is people think they have an ownership over you. They believe that they have the right to say what they want. They have, you know, you can have your opinion, but like they feel that they can say whatever they want to you unfiltered. They make assumptions and rumors up, and it's just really gross and toxic. So I went through a phase where I was like really insecure about even showing up because I felt like I was letting people down. But then I came to the realization that like the people who are here for me are here for me. Like whether I weigh 10 pounds or 70 pounds, like I'm me, who I am, who I am. And I also gave people the permission. I was like, if you feel that you are going through like toxic thought patterns because of watching someone else's life, then you should absolutely set the boundary and remove that person from your life, like including me. If me losing weight, if me getting healthy is triggering you and making you feel like toxic towards me, then that clearly means you shouldn't be consuming my content. And same with me, like someone like Morgan, you can be literally winning right now. Like you are winning, doing the best that you can in everything in life. And I could be like, I don't like her because she's winning. And then I would start ripping you apart. Like, ew, look at her hair. Look at her outfit. She's doing this. She's saying this. That's how I know, like, okay, she's not doing anything wrong. I'm triggered by her winning. That's a me problem. And I'm going to mute her. So I've like spent the last year muting people that I felt were making me feel toxic. And I fully am aware that it's not them. Like, they're not the problem. I'm the problem. I'm the problem, and I'm the one that is triggered by something that they're doing that has nothing to do with me. And I've come to terms with that. Like, I tell people, like, please unfollow or unmute. I will not be offended. You can come back when you feel like you're ready, or you don't have to come back at all. So that's been something that I've been navigating the last year with the weight loss. Oh, my gosh.
I think that would be such a good episode to listen to. So I think everyone, if you haven't found Nina's podcast, go listen to it. Mama Knows podcast. So good. And thank you for just being so vulnerable with us and talking through that. And I think just like I always have to remind myself, there's our people, right? Like our people are in our audiences, and they're always going to support us and be there, and the people who need us are there. And I think sometimes it's so easy to get caught up on the critical voices or people who don't like something about us. It's easy to remember them, and then having to always come back to, okay, there's people who they really love our content and it really helps them. So I know you have so many of those people in your audience, and I have loved following you and watching your journey. And I just so appreciate your self-awareness and talking through all these topics today we've talked through. Is there anything that we haven't talked about that you feel like you'd want to add to this interview?
One thing that I am super passionate about talking about is confidence in motherhood and in for women in general, and how it's, people ask me all the time, like, how are you so confident? And I'm not. Like, every day I have to work on it. And it's not just physical confidence, right? Like, it's mental confidence too. I recently went through something mentally with a friendship where I was feeling super vulnerable and not confident in myself at all. I was like doubting myself, questioning myself. And the thing that I tell people is confidence is a practice skill. You have to literally choose every single day to be confident. And some days you're not going to be. Some days you're not going to choose it. You're going to say, fuck it. Like, I look like a fat cow and I don't care. And I'm just going to sit on the couch and eat a pint of ice cream and no one likes me. Yeah, that's toxic. We don't like that thinking, but some days are going to be like that. But if you don't choose to be confident, you're not going to be confident. If you're not going to look in the mirror and say, I really, tell yourself what you like about yourself. Tell yourself, not just physically, but like emotionally and mentally. What do you like? Today, I was able to fill my 5-year-old's love bucket by putting a bunch of kisses in his pockets before school. Like, I'm a good mom. That's badass. Like, telling yourself that in the mirror or just like out loud is rewiring your brain. So that's something I'm super passionate about is I'm not confident every day. It's something that I have to literally practice. On days where I'm feeling really low, even though it feels weird, I purposely make myself say things to myself that are positive and good. And it feels weird, but it literally works. It I don't know what it does in the brain, but it magically makes me feel better.
I love it so much. It's so true. I teach all my clients. I have a process called the morning alignment. And it's basically an identity shift that I teach them how to do every single morning. And it does involve affirmations and vision statements. And I have to do that. I still do it myself. Yeah. I've been doing it for 5 years. And if I don't do it, I will notice that I feel off. So it is a daily. I love that you talked about that. That confidence is a daily practice. It so is. Yeah. Thank you so much for being here and for being vulnerable with us. Please tell everyone how they can find you and be influenced to buy all the amazing outfits for me. I know you do more than that, but that's certainly one of the ways I connect with you. I'm like, thank you. I'll just get all my wardrobe from Nina. Love it.
Well, Morgan, thank you so much for having me. It feels so good to be able to have these conversations with like-minded women. And I just love what you do for women and for couples and for everyone. I think that your work is incredible. So I really appreciate you having me. As far as where everyone can find me, I'm at Balkanina, Balkanina. And I'm sure you can tag it in the notes, but I'm on all social media platforms. Plus, I have a podcast called Mama Knows, which is my passion project. If you're a mama or even not, there's tons of episodes on relationships and mental health. I would love for you to give it a listen.
Awesome. Yes. And we'll put all of that in the show notes. So make sure you connect with Nina if you haven't already. And thank you again so much. I can't wait. I know I'm going to be coming on your show, so I can't wait to do that too. We're going to have a really juicy conversation.
Can't wait.
Everyone, of course, Nina and I both, we're wishing you high self-worth and great relationships. Until next time. Thanks for tuning in. I really appreciate each and every one of you. The best way you can thank me is by sharing this episode on Instagram or Facebook. Make sure you tag me. It would mean the world to me if you took just a moment to leave me a written review on Apple Podcasts. This podcast is not free to produce. And the more that you help this show grow, the more people will be able to help. Until next time, I'm wishing you high self-worth and great relationships. Thank you for being part of this community.